Well, good morning. It is good to see you all today. For those of you that are in the room and for those of you that are joining us online, we welcome you to the DTS Arts Conference, where it provides an opportunity for students to think critically about the integration of creativity and theology in the church and in the world. We are joined especially today, who you already see, Ayoka Ajay, who is to my right, my sister, an American Sign Language interpreter, professional for 13 years, and if you have ever been out to Oak Cliff Bible Fellowship, you have seen her. She's joining us for the conference today and for tomorrow, so would you please join me in welcoming her today? The theme of this year's conference is How Storytellers Develop Their Projects. Today in chapel, Dr. Sandra Glahn, professor of media arts and worship, will be hosting a panel of recent graduates of Dallas Theological Seminary. Each of our panelists once sat in this chapel space with the seed of an idea. Those ideas have all matured and multiplied in ministries and projects that we will be hearing about today. All of these projects are fewer than 5 years old. Today, we'll get to hear about the inception of these ideas, how they grew and how they developed in process, and how it's going even today in their viability. So here are our panelists. Kelsey Hensey, an MAC grad, founder of Fathom Magazine. Jed Oystich, THM grad, writer and editor for the Christian media industry in various ways. Chase Jones, THM grad, church planter and YouTube vlogger. And Jasmine Sanchez Linares, THM grad and current Doctor of Ministry candidate and co-host for a podcast in Spanish. We are looking forward to this today. And so in that regard, would you please join me in welcoming Dr. Sandra Glahn and our panelists to chapel today.
Thank you. Good morning. It's my real pleasure to share with you some of these people that we love and whom we have watched. And as was mentioned by Dr. Yarborough, our theme this year is story. Madeleine L'Engle, who's probably best known for A Wrinkle in Time, said Jesus was not a theologian. He was God who told stories. And each one of us is a walking, living story told of God's faithfulness. If we had all day, we would be able to hear the different stories that we have to tell. And one of the reasons we wanted to bring fairly recent grads was to remind everybody who's here in the room and who's listening that we each have a story to tell, and there are a thousand different ways to tell a story. It might be through vlogging. It might be through poetry. It might be through nonfiction. It might be through novel writing. On and on it goes, right? Whether it's visual, moving, still, whether it's written, academic, nonfiction, a zillion ways to tell God's story. And so this morning, as was mentioned, we have some very exciting storytellers to share with. And I want to begin by asking each one, and we'll start with you if we might, Jasmine, to tell us a little bit about how you minister as a storyteller.
Hello, I'm Jasmine, and well, I think that happens through a number of ways. One, it happens through my current job. I work as a high school teacher in the Pelham. It's a very exciting place to be, and a place where we have students that live all over the Metroplex, and we get to listen to their stories constantly. And our school is really great in the sense that it allows us to share within our class content anything and however we wanted to. In fact, we're challenged really to be as creative as we can with our content. So that is one way. Another one is through a podcast that I have the privilege to co-host with two very good friends and colleagues that are also our THM. One is THM grad, another is a counseling grad. And we have a podcast called Hablemos de Verdad. In Spanish, it means let's speak about truths, where we talk about theology, culture, and topics related to human condition. So it's a podcast that we put out there every 2 weeks at the moment. And then finally, through the ministry that God has allowed me to lead for the past couple months, which I am a co-leader at Redeemer Bible Church for the young adults. It's a very exciting group that we have. Everybody there is very, they are great thinkers. They are great at asking questions. And I really love our discussions we have every week.
Great. Thanks, Jasmine. Let's hear from you, Chase, please.
Well, hey, everybody. So I am a church planter and a YouTuber. And so one of the ways that I use stories on my YouTube channel, there's kind of three focuses on our channel. So one of them is just kind of talking through difficult issues and sensitive issues regarding race, but not really telling people how to think, but just sharing my stories and my experiences. And then also church planting. One of the things I realize is there's not a lot of people documenting the church planting process on YouTube. And so that's one of the things I do. And then my wife and I are raising a three-year-old. So our daughter's 3 and a half. And so just documenting and capturing the kind of mundane moments of life and kind of turning that into story form. And so those are kind of the three emphases of storytelling on our channel.
Great. Thanks, Chase. Kelsey, let's hear from you.
So I am the founder and editor-in-chief at Fathom Mag, and we publish a digital magazine, and we have a podcast, and we have a couple news columns that come up every week, and all of those have a narrative focus. Our hope is that we would tell, we would show people through story how to think deeper about their faith instead of just tell them what to believe. And so we use our articles, we use poetry, we use art as all means to do that through this digital platform.
Great, thanks. And that leaves us with Jed.
Yeah, hi, my name's Jed. I am a reluctant convert to the arts, as it were. Got into it by saving all of my comm electives for the very last moment at DTS, and I'm very thankful that I did because it fundamentally changed the trajectory of my life. I didn't intend to set out editing and changing other people's words, but that's kind of where I'm at now. The bulk of my storytelling happens by helping other people tell their stories well. I function as an editor. I help Kelsey out when I can, and most of my other work professionally is in the editing space. But I'm also a dad. I have four kids, and all of them love stories. And so I spend a lot of my time as a parent shaping their worldview through story. And the third, the real passion project that kind of got me into this space was experimenting with and trying to nail down how to teach the story of the Bible in a way that allows the people who are interacting with and engaging the story of the Bible to pull back the curtain and watch what authors in various books of the text are doing from a literary perspective. So in some ways, it's almost like teaching lit classes, but using the Bible as your main text. And that's been a fun project over the years that kind of supplements a lot of what I'm doing professionally. I kind of do that in the sides and margins of the life of my life. So, yeah, that's about it.
Thanks, Jed. So let's just keep the same order. And if you would answer for us, what motivated you to get started in the various part of the arts that you're working in? So for Jasmine, what motivated you to start a podcast?
Yes, I think for us, after maybe about a year when we had graduated with our master's, we just were meditating that there is not really a lot of content out there, specifically within a podcast that is solid theology and solid Bible teaching in Spanish, and especially nothing like that done by women. So we did some research about it to see if actually what we thought was true or it was just an idea we had. And we realized that, yes, there was really not a lot of quality content as in comparison that we find in English, for instance. So that was one of the first things. And then also just because, you know, we really felt the need to share with those people from back home and people who don't have access to maybe some of the English resources or who don't speak English, just to share with them the really great things we've learned in DTS through our master's programs. And that was the main thing that motivated us to create this project.
So Jasmine, you said we, so you have a co-host and you also mentioned back home. So where's home?
Oh yeah, home is in Puebla, Mexico. So it's kind of central south in Mexico. It's a very traditional part of the country and it's very beautiful.
And your co-host is? Tell us about your co-host.
Oh yeah, sorry. So my co-hosts are Annalisa Vargas. She's a THM grad from 2018. And Mara Estrada, she is a counseling grad that also graduated in 2018.
Great, thanks. Chase, please. What motivated you?
Yeah, so for me, it was actually in a couple of the classes at DTS. The first one was evangelism. We had come up with a creative way to share the gospel. And so I had always kind of been drawn to video and video editing, but never really done it. And so I went down in the media center and kind of taught myself how to edit videos down there and made a video for that class. And then a couple semesters later for Trinitarianism, we had a similar project where we had to do a creative, all right, those of you who have taken that know all about that project. And so I decided to do a, kind of a spoken word on the Trinity. And so after about a year of just putting out various videos, I realized that people were subscribing to the channel. And so I realized that we should probably try and focus, take it in some sort of direction. And so my wife and I were really kind of watching other family vlogs and people who captured their family moments in a creative way. So it wasn't just home videos. There was kind of a creative storytelling element to them. And so we were interested in that and kind of started doing that. When I moved back to Ohio, started planning this church up here and realized there was just not a lot of people on YouTube that were documenting the behind the scenes of pastoring and church planting. There were a lot of pastors who just kind of did devotional style videos, but no really behind the scenes type videos. And so that's kind of was the inspiration for taking the family vlog in that direction.
So both you and Jasmine saw a need in the market and saw some skills that you had and met it. Great, thanks. Kelsey.
Yeah, I have more or less a similar experience to both Chase and Jasmine. I would say that my love of storytelling and developing storytelling came actually before I got to seminary. I worked as an advertising agency as a strategy planner for 5 years, and I loved that job. And what I found out when I got to seminary was how everyone told me how it was going to be so different. And I was like, man, this is just a lot of these skills transfer over to being and understanding and telling people about the Bible. And so I loved storytelling from the time that I started my professional job and after college. And when I got to seminary, I took your classes, Dr. Golan, and loved seeing how writing for publishing created a new outlet to tell these stories that in my mind were stories that were typically kept within the church walls. I saw a new avenue to take storytelling outside of the church walls, and I loved that aspect of it. And when I started writing for different publications, when I was in your class, and then after I graduated, I found that story wasn't the primary motivation for a lot of publishers, that answers were the primary motivation for a lot of publishers. And as I sort of navigated that world, I wanted a place to be able to use narrative to write instead of just answers, trying to tell people, give people an argument. So my husband was like, man, maybe you should just put those two worlds together of business and your seminary storytelling and start a platform on your own.
And it's done kind of well, right? I mean, they won a lot of awards from the Evangelical Press Association. Okay, thank
you.
Very
kind of them.
Thank you. Jed, what motivated you?
So like I said, I was a reluctant convert to the arts in a lot of ways. I started seminary in the Old Testament BE departments. I wanted to be a professor of ancient Semitics. That I saw the Bible as a text to be scientifically dissected and explained and then unpacked. But the longer that I was in, specifically the Old Testament, the more I realized that there's a literary beauty to what each of the various authors in the text are doing. And it's sophisticated. It's profoundly sophisticated. And I started to wonder why no one was really talking about the Bible as a literary book, not just as a whole, but how each of the pieces contributed to a literary unity. And so a lot of the work that I ended up doing later on in classes with Dr. Glahn and in communications electives and things along those lines was all aimed at digging into the literary sophistication of the Bible. And it was a question that I couldn't answer with any of the textbooks or any of the classes that I was taking. So I figured I'd go figure out the answers myself. And what I discovered is that if you are able to pull back the curtain on what each individual author in every book of the Bible is doing from a literary perspective, you are able to simultaneously make the Bible come alive, because now all of a sudden it's a story rather than just a set of data. But you also unlock the ability to start asking hard questions about the text and also about God and our faith that you might not be or feel free to ask if you're bound to a purely scientific or theological rigor. The arts enable us to deal with the Bible in a way that allows for frustration and confusion and hurt and pain. And so a lot of those questions are what drove a lot of the projects. I did a couple of projects on my own. I did a directed study with Dr. Glahn and Dr. Elliot Johnson, and that kind of dived into the question of literary analysis of the Bible, but then also branched into how do you share the story of the Bible with people who would not pick up a Bible in a way that accomplishes in their hearts and minds what the Bible sets out to, and do it all purely from a literary perspective. So that kind of, that was the origin story of a lot of the work that I've done since then as well.
Thanks, Jed. What did you all end up learning on the job that you needed to know? So Jasmine, I'm going to imagine you didn't know anything about how to do a podcast. So what are some things you had to self-teach?
Well, I think first that as trendy as that could sound to have a podcast right now, it's way easier to hear about it, look it, than actually doing one yourself, especially if you have absolutely zero super great contacts that are going to put you in all these platforms and things. You know, like if you're starting from scratch, it's been very challenging in a good way, but definitely hard in the sense that, for instance, the three of us have full-time jobs and a lot of other responsibilities. And the three of us do everything from scratch. Like we do our own images, we do our own editing, we manage our social media accounts, and we also, for our episodes, we really do our research and we talk about it before we write our scripts or whatever needs to happen. So it is a process that definitely takes a lot of time. And I think that, thank God, we have been preparing, even though we've been out just since the summer, but we really been working on this for about a year and a half. So I think that something that the three of us have learned is that there is never going to be enough preparation. You know, there's always something you can definitely be doing more, but then, you know, you just have to have your project and say, okay, we work on this. Yes, it's not 100% perfect, but we're going to put it out there and we'll see what God is going to do. So
great. Yes. Thank you. Chase, what did you have to learn?
Yeah, the editing side of things, it definitely took some time to learn. One of the unique things about YouTube is one of the ways you learn how to make better YouTube videos is by watching YouTube videos. And so there's tons of tutorials and all that sort of stuff that I was spending a lot of time just learning the software. But one of the things that I really had to learn as well, and Jasmine kind of mentioned it at the end, was coming to grips with not everything's going to be completely perfect and completely the way that I want it to be, and learning to just put things out instead of trying to put the perfect video out. So that took some getting used to.
Okay, thanks. Kelsey?
Yeah, I think I learned that I knew so very little about what I wanted to do when I tried to get this going right from the start. So I learned a lot by really paying attention to other platforms of the things that I would have to start considering. So typically when I would go somewhere, go to like a somebody's online page to read something, I'm just reading it and moving on. I'm not paying attention to how they're placing their photos and what they're doing with their paragraph breaks and how they're using footnotes if they have them or those sorts of things, like the actual experience. I started paying a lot of attention to what they were doing as far as how it was experienced by someone else. But then I also started asking people who would give me some time the places that I what I'm going to be missing, right? Like, I didn't know what I didn't know. And so I needed to find some people who could basically tell me where I wasn't seeing the things I needed to be looking for. So I talked to a couple professors at DTS, but I also had friends who had been in publishing in lots of different areas, not just Christian publishing, and newspapers, or even just local publishing places that could give me some help. So I started learning from those people. Also just people who had started a business before. I wanted to talk to folks who were really familiar with what it looked like to turn in all of that paperwork that you have to turn in to be officially an LLC, and what I needed to be keeping track of to do my taxes, and just the things that you're not like, you know what, I want to figure out taxes in order to start a publishing company. No, nobody thinks that. But I needed to talk to some people to make sure I had my ducks in a row. And when I did that, for us, one of those big questions was, are we going to be a nonprofit or a for-profit company? And so I was going down lots of different roads, and that actually, we started as a for-profit company. We considered in a couple years ago moving to be a nonprofit. We did about 8 months worth of work to figure out whether or not we should do that, to basically say, no, we need to stay where we are. So like, learning is just consistent. I was learning from the get-go. I'm still learning. We will always consistently be learning. And I think one of the new ways that now, so Fathom turned 4 on Saturday, past Saturday. I think one of the newest ways for me that I'm coming up with opportunities to learn are what I think of more as mentor moments. There are lots of people who do what Fathom is doing in some way, shape, or form. And as we've grown, we've gotten to talk with more of those people. We have access to them. And so when I do, I'm looking to learn from them in that moment what I can. Sometimes that just means like eating a slice of humble pie, right? And being like, hey, listen, I have no idea how you're doing this. Could you tell me? And I have to learn it. I have to learn how to be like, hi, I'm the editor-in-chief of Fathom, and I'm clueless. Could you help me out? But when I can do that, I end up learning in these little mentorship moments from these people.
That sounds a little like you've gone and found your own mentors.
Yeah, I don't know if they know that, but yeah.
Okay, thanks. Jed?
Yeah, I'll just echo what everyone else has already said. 90% of learning to do anything is just interacting with the people who are already doing it. And when it comes to a big portion of what I try to do in the margins of my day is novel writing. And I have a couple of the different ones that I have worked on and am in the process of working on in conjunction with all the other things that I put on my own plate. But what I realized very quickly when it comes to novel writing is, even though I've read a ton of novels, I've never actually looked at the process by which you put a novel together. And so a lot of my initial work was just reading a ton of manuals and how-tos and breakdowns on story construction, how stories have been told across time, how the stories are told now compared to how they used to be told, how fiction has evolved. There's so much literature out there. That you could put a pile of books on your desk and never get through it and still not know a quarter of what there is to know about how to do stories or how to tell stories. But eventually it just becomes one of those things where you just have to dive into it. You just have to start doing it. And kind of like Kelsey said, you know, halfway through, you'll realize that you made a major mistake at the very beginning and you've got to go back and undo everything. And that's okay. I think failure is an integral part of the artistic endeavor. So whether it's novel writing or even teaching and learning how to deconstruct biblical narratives to reconstruct them for a new audience, it's a lot of it's just failure. I did a lot of trial runs with dramatic storytelling of different biblical narratives that went over really, really poorly with audiences. they walked away saying, I would never listen to that. I would never let my kids listen to it. That's terrible. It's going to create all these wrong pictures of who God is. And I had to take that back to the beginning and go, okay, well, this isn't working. So yeah, I think there's when it comes to at least the discipline of writing story, novel writing, long form storytelling, it's equal parts learning from people who are already doing it, learning from the literature, and then also trying and failing. Failure is one of the best teachers, I think, in the artistic endeavors.
So true. Thank you. So y'all have talked a little bit about working with other people, and I want to capitalize on that a little. Talk to us about collaboration and how that's gone, what you've learned. Maybe some of the surprises in collaboration, or maybe some of the benefits. Jasmine?
Yeah, I think that for us, it has been a really big blessing and something that we were very clear, and I'm very glad that we did that from the beginning, is to know, or we said, this is a project where the three of us have the same amount of responsibility, and none of us is more than the other. Like, we don't even talk about, okay, who came up with the idea first, or who makes sure that we all met first. We just always talk about as in, this is of all of us, like the three of us have the same equal value in this. And the thing that we do try to divide is like the responsibilities that everybody will do, based on what is easier for us or things that are talents or things like that, which has been really great because it has helped us to, okay, if I am very good in, I am going to do the editing to make sure that what we write, it's, you know, presentable. Okay, I'll do it. Or if one of us is the one in charge of, okay, I'm going to do the images because it's easier for me. So just that has been great. I think it's been also very surprising in a very good way, the fact that I knew that we were good friends. I just didn't know how it was going to be working together. And that sometimes can go really great or really bad. And thank God for us was really great. So I'm very thankful so far. It's been good. I think also it doesn't mean that we don't ever have disagreements, but I am very grateful that by God's grace, we've been able to talk them out and just, you know, make sure that we solve them and even ask for each other forgiveness when necessary.
Great. Thank you. Chase, collaboration.
Yeah, I think collaborations are huge for being on YouTube especially. And so there's several other Christians on YouTube, and we kind of find each other somehow and do videos together. There's a group called Vlog Pastors, which isn't the most creative name, but where many of us just did a large-scale collaboration through the month of August. And so all of us were answering the same question, putting out the same video, and that was a real success for all of our channels. But one of the things that I've also found to be helpful for those who are watching the content on YouTube is to just expose them to other voices as well. And so I've been reaching out to people and interviewing them on the channel as well. And so most recently being Priscilla Shire, I ended up coming on the channel and I was able to have a conversation with her about raising black boys in 2020. And so just allowing the people who are watching these videos to hear all the different perspectives, I think is huge.
Love it. Thank you. Kelsey?
Yeah. Fathom is basically just a never-ending collaboration. It started as a collaboration as soon as I knew that I needed to actually figure out how to do this thing I wanted to do, create this platform. I knew I was not going to be able to do it by myself. There were just flat out writing skills that I didn't have. I have never been able to copy edit in any sort of impressive way. It's actually unimpressive. I'm a terrible copy editor. Jed is just right there. He can even come in and tell you it's bad. Like, they will put, somebody will fix it and I will go in and change one line. And they're like, well, that was wrong. It's great. So I knew I needed somebody who had the skills I didn't have. And I also knew that I needed the accountability of having some other people do this with me. I have had a habit in the past of starting things and then just getting sick of doing them and moving on. And so I needed some accountability. So I had a friend from my writing for publishing class that I reached out to. And he knew a great copy editor, and immediately Fathom turned in from something I wanted to do to something that we wanted to do. And from that point on, I think that we just decided to take that mentality into what we did at Fathom, that it wasn't about what one of us wanted to do, that it was about what we all wanted to do and to accomplish. And every single month we are working with something around 30 different writers or creators of some sort, poets or artists. Every issue is a massive collaboration. It's an incredible amount of emails that go back and forth. It is an editorial collaboration. That team that started as the three of us is now, actually neither John or Brandon are doing the same things they were doing before with Fathom. And our editorial team has changed. Like Jed said, Jed is a huge part of what we're doing. Colin Huber, who's also a DTS grad, is in there. Sophie DeMuth is in there. Rachel Welcher is in there helping us edit. And so we are making these choices as a team for what we want to accomplish, not necessarily what just one of us wants to accomplish. That said, I do think one thing that makes collaboration work really well in these environments is wanting to see the people around you flourish and wanting them to be able to use their gifts. And like, you know what? The very first time we had a poetry contest, I was like, who writes poetry? Like, nobody writes poetry. I don't know anybody who does that. And John was like, no, like, I love reading poetry. I know a lot of people do it. And I was like, you know what? I want you to be able to do that. That's awesome. Guess who was wrong? I was wrong. A ton of people write really beautiful poetry and they submitted it. And we had so many people sending in beautiful work. And if I would have been like, hey, listen, like we decided I'm the editor in chief and I don't like poetry, so we're not having it. Then we would have been much worse off today than we are now. And we get a lot of great work because we value each other in the process instead of just wanting to get our own thing done.
That's especially encouraging, I think, because so few magazines are publishing poetry, right? So
yeah, probably they have more people like me, right? I needed somebody else to show me the way.
Great, thanks. Jed, collaboration.
So I do a lot of my own projects on the side, things that I'm thinking about and dreaming about and trying to make work. The greatest benefit from a written perspective is having readers. And I have a lot of good friends who I send manuscripts to, or I send sections of a thought to get their feedback on it. Usually it comes back and people are telling me they don't understand it, or it doesn't make sense, or it's all messy. And, you know, it's the continual knife to the heart that is editorial feedback, but it's a good process. But the thing I think that I've had to learn the most is in my professional work, most of what I do is editorial work, working with writers. And inevitably, I always end up seeing an end product that I envision being the thing that we arrive at, either collaboratively or by force of my own editorial pen. And I think the biggest learning curve as an editor is how to let go of a vision and let someone else's dreams or desires or voice, whatever aspect of their person they're bringing to their written project, let that win. I'm not used to not winning. And I think as an editor, you kind of have to let go in a lot of ways if you want to create something that's bigger than both the writer and the editor. And so collaboration in my professional life has looked like surrendering a lot of personal preferences about editorial voice and style and allowing writers to flourish as they are, which is it's a form of collaboration, I think, that benefits both an editor and a writer, because as an editor, I'm learning new ways to think about writing as new writers are submitting their writing. And as writers, they're learning, hopefully learning how to continue to grow and be better at their own craft. So collaboration is an inevitable part of the writing process that I've seen and felt both the good and the bad sides of.
So true. Let's talk a minute about feedback. So if each one of you would maybe share hearing from a listener or a reader or even a God story that where you saw Christ present in the work that you were doing or saw the way he was using you, tell us a story. Jasmine?
I think probably one of my favorite episodes from the ones we've done was when we talk about a scripture We try to talk about it from not as in, oh, why it's important to read the Bible, but more as in, where does it come from? What about the manuscripts? Or what about the canon? Does that matter? And we knew we were a little nervous because, you know, it's something that perhaps to the inner culture, to the person that has nothing to do with seminary circles, it can find a little boring, maybe. But we also, I really like it because we mention just things that we use every day, but we don't really know, like the Spanish Bible, for instance, like how we talk, how we really didn't have a Spanish Bible until late in the 1500s. And yet until 1800s, it was when it started to arrive to Mexico and Latin America, but yet people didn't have access to that Bible until the 1900s. And just talking about it and how it has impacted us today in Latin America, about Christianity, for instance. And it was very nice to see that we had a lot of feedback from people listening, just saying things like, wow, I didn't ever, you know, I didn't know that, or I didn't think that that was important or that that mattered. And I think that I'm very thankful that all of us have people within our circles that are non-believers. And we aim our episodes, no matter our topic, to really talk them in a way that everybody can understand. And my father specifically, he is not only not a believer, but he's absolutely not religious at all. And he listened to that. And he gave me a great feedback in terms of, I really understood what you guys said. And I thought that that was very interesting. And I would really like to know more. So just seeing that has been very helpful. I think that also there could be moments where the feedback is not always going to be like that, you know, in our culture, in the Mexican culture, everybody loves to tell you what to do, no matter if they don't know you or if you didn't ask them. So sometimes we have this cause, they're like, oh, you guys should, la, la, la. But that happens too. So,
Thank you.
You have to start.
Chase. Yes.
Yeah, you know, my favorite feedback that I get is when people say that they're using these videos that we're putting out, whether like they're showing, you know, people in their church or that they're sending it to other people because it impacted them. That's probably the best feedback that I get. And then, of course, like Jasmine said, there's also negative feedback as well. But really just hearing that people are using what I'm putting out is very meaningful and impactful. And one of the things that I've been learning over this time as well is when to listen to the negative criticism, right? And when to not listen to it. There was a video I put out last September or around then that had to do with online church. And it was kind of giving a negative view about church online. And then here we are in 2020 where everyone's church is online, right? So also humility. Right, exactly. And so I've learned humility through this whole process as well, because there's feedback that I might not have listened to that maybe I should have listened to. Overall, when people tell me that they're using the stuff that I put out and that it impacts them, that's what impacts me.
Great. Thank you. Kelsey?
Yeah. Feedback runs the gamut all the time. We've had everything from cease and desist letters to a couple of our articles are on required reading lists for Duke Divinity. And we've had some Harvard students do a live reading of an article that we've had and then have a debate about it, something Anthony Bradley wrote for us. So as far as how people have interacted with it, generally speaking, it's all over the board, which is fine, which is great. It's whatever it needs to be. I think that what Chase said is right. Learning to decipher the feedback, one, not to be intoxicated by the good stuff, right? Like, praise the Lord that he will use the work that we do. But he's not required to continue to do that. And so there is no point in time do I want to hear so much, only be willing to hear so many good things and to be so caught up with so many good things, that I forget what we're after. And so part of it is not being intoxicated by everything that everyone loves, all of the time. But it's also part of it is being confident in some of the decisions that you've made. the more and more we put things out, the more and more it becomes obvious that people don't know what goes into creating the things that that storytellers write. And they're just interacting with it, right? And they're coming back with what they think about what you wrote about those things. And that's okay. They get to have the space to tell you what they think about them. And also, I get to try to believe the best about them. And if they knew everything that went into everything that we created, maybe they wouldn't say what they said. Or they come after, if I'm very loyal to my people. And so if you're going to come after somebody who's working at Fathom as editorially, like, it's going to take a whole lot for me to bend to your demands. If you come sarcastically, or if you do come just telling us what to do, I'm going to be confident in some of the decisions that we've made, as well as willing to hear what you have to say. So trying to find the balance in those things is an interesting ride.
Yeah, great. Jed, 30 seconds. Talk about feedback.
I'd just say find somebody who will read your stuff and be honest with you. I think artists in general, I know me as a writer, I suffer from imposter syndrome all the time. I'm just pretending. I'm not good at this. This is just me playing at an adult's game, and I'm just a child. And I have a friend named Kelsey who often reads my stuff and says, no, this is good, and you need to hear that it is good. So I would just say feedback from treasured friends who are willing to tell you the truth and often tell you, no, you are doing something that's worth doing is really important, especially if you're someone who suffers from that sense of, you know, I shouldn't be doing what I'm doing.
Thank you all so much. Y'all, let's give them a hand. Appreciate that.